This is an interview given on the 14th of May 2011 with Mr. Basil Fish at Thorpe Visitor Centre regarding his experiences in World War II.
Still alive?
Yes, it's fine. So, when did you join the RAF, Basil?
Well, I was at university in Manchester and they formed an air squadron. This was 1941, and I preferred flying, or the thought of flying, to studying civil engineering. So the answer to your question really is I volunteered in November 1941.
And where did you do your training?
Well, the initial training really was from Ringway in Manchester, but this was the University Air Squadron, and we then, at the end of that term, the summer term, I actually joined the Air Force proper, and with the princely rank of leading air craftsman. And we went down to what is called RCTASI, Air Crew Recruiting Centre, down in London. And from then onwards, we were trained for whatever membership of the crew we were best suited for.
And you had to be navigator.
In my particular case, because I knew that two and two made four instead of five, it made me a blinking navigator.
Did you have hopes of being a pilot, or were you quite happy as a navigator?
I resented, if you like, not being a pilot, because since then, of course, I've gained my private pilot's license, and then I several hours in. But at the time, I was quite upset, actually. But as I say, I knew that two and two made four and not five. I should have said two and two make five, and then I would have been a pilot, you see.
And you did, you crewed up at an OTU. Where would that have been?
Well, we did the ITW, that's the initial training wing, yes. at university. I was at Manchester University, so I joined with the princely rank of leading air craftsman. And then we were given what I call the real training, the flying training, and we were actually sent out to South Africa. And believe it or not, it took 7 weeks to get there by boat. And then we qualified with our wing, and we qualified as navigator. We thought we knew it all until we came back to England. And then, of course, we had to, if you like, re-educate ourselves to flying, serious flying over here in Britain. Then it was, 1942?
And you then went to...
We did... Let me just get the facts right. We did the initial training, and then we went to what they called OTU, Operational Training Unit, where the flying was becoming more serious. And we were flying Wellingtons, and that was at Swinderby and Sowston. And then after that, for reasons I just don't know, we went straight to 617 Squadron. Now, in those days, people on 617 were very experienced airmen. They'd been on operation flying and that sort of thing. And as a crew, when we went along, never having seen a shot fired in anger, I wasn't quite sure how we were received. But after a few weeks, we were part of the squadron. And I stayed with them ever since, well, for the rest of the war, I should say. And then it was a toss of either going back to university and getting my degree, or staying on in the Air Force. And after a lot of, if you like, heart searching, I decided to go back to university. And that then was in 1945, 1946.
Where were you first stationed with 617?
Well, do you mean operationally?
Yes.
Here. We were the first, if you like, non-experienced crew, or one of the first non-experienced crew, to come to Woodhall Spa. And that's where I spent the rest of my Air Force career, at Woodhall Spa.
A happy time in spite of what you were doing?
Yes, I adopted the attitude I really wasn't going to come out, you know, with 10 fingers and 10 toes. It just didn't happen. But we were a very, very close-knit squadron, and I stayed there, and I did, I think, 24 operations in total until the end of the war. Then I applied for early release to go back to university. And in those days, they were jolly glad to get rid of their cool colonel.
Who was your commanding officer here?
We had, first of all, it was a chap called Tate, Willie Tate. And then Willie Tate, who was a wing commander, it was then taken over by Group Captain Fokier. Very unusual for a group captain to be in charge, but he was a very, what shall I say, he seemed to be a fierce man, but he had a heart of gold, I found, actually. So the answer to your question is William Tate, then Group Captain Fokier.
Would you like to tell us about any of your operations, or?
Well, there's one operation which I shall never, ever forget, and that was about our eighth. And flying conditions were very, very poor. Low cloud, pure visibility, and we were actually, takeoff was postponed on more than one occasion, and we eventually took off. I forget which the target was, quite honestly, now. And on the way back, we pranged, and we lost two of the crew. We were all injured one way or another, but I managed to be able to walk, which was an absolute blessing, because I could then sort of walk, and eventually we got the help that we needed. And I carried on flying after I'd been hospitalised for a while, and unfortunately I was the only member of the crew who could actually fly, who was fit enough to fly, I should say.
So you then had to fit in with another crew?
Correct. I became what was known as a spare bod. In other words, if they wanted a navigator, I was a spare, like having a spare tire on a car, I suppose. And I flew with some very interesting people, actually.
Can you tell us about any of them or your experiences?
Well, the one experience that sticks in my mind, I better not mention names, but the pilot was a squadron leader chap, a very nice fellow. And I knew it was a publicity stunt, but we were actually flying over Hitler's hideout at the end of the war. And the pilot did a dummy run. It wasn't satisfactory. Very hard to see the target and where Hitler was. And then we did another dummy run, and still we couldn't find the target. And he said, well, what do you think, Baz? I said, what do I think? I think we ought to get the hell out of here. And do you know what he said? You're dead right. And that was it. That was my very last, I think that was my last operational trip.
How did you feel when you came to the end of that period in your life and then a completely different...
Very, very relieved.
Yes. Did you miss the comradeship?
Yes, I did, actually. Being a member of a crew, particularly the first crew, you're one of a family. Rank doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are or what you're doing. You're part of a team of seven. That I do, well, I did miss, because your first crew is your, what should I say, your fondest crew.
How did you feel about when you were with the other crews? Did you...
Well, I knew my stuff, let's put it that way, and the people I flew with were very experienced, particularly the pilots were very experienced. It was a job of work, really.
Did you know at the time the prestige of being with 617?
No, is the answer. I was perhaps too junior. I mean, Gibson was the originator, and then we had... Cheshire and people like that who were extreme, and Willie Tate was a wonderful commanding officer. I was very happy there, let's put it that way. Or not unhappy might be a better way of putting it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, if I may, I'd like to ask you about one or two other 617 people that you may have served with. Did you know Mickey Martin at all?
No.
He'd gone by the time he had arrived.
Yes, he'd.
And Shannon, too, had gone by that time.
That is correct.
Yes, I see that. Sorry. We know that very often navigators remained in at their table during the bombing run. Very few of them actually looked away. Did you actually have a look at what was going on around you, or did your duties keep you calculating all the time?
Once my calculations had been done, I'd given the information to the bomb aim, because he then was the, if you like, in charge, the bomb aimer. Yeah. I would often actually leave my table, my navigation table, just to see what was going on. And I can't remember whether I did it every time. I doubt I did it every time, because when you see what's going on there, you're just jolly glad to get back and not see it.
And were any of your operations in daylight?
That's a very difficult question to answer, but I would say, without fear of contradiction, that of all the operations I did, probably 80% were during daylight.
Could you tell us what it was like to see a group of Lancasters flying close together? It must have been quite an experience and quite frightening in some respects.
Comforting.
Was it? Yes. How close were they?
Well, not close enough to collide, quite. I mean, that was a pilot's job. And it was pretty good in formation, actually, formation flying. Because don't forget, I mean, on that squadron, the pilots in particular were very, very experienced indeed.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, we do read of collisions, and we know that Bomber Command normally flew at night. It must have taken a little bit of practice to fly in formation in daylight.
Yes, but at least you could see what was happening, as it were. And I can't remember any, encounters which were worrying.
Were you on the Tirpitz missions?
Yeah.
On all three, or?
No, the first one, I don't. The first one on the Tirpitz, the squadron flew over to Russia, and just being brief, it was a disaster because the weather was bad and all that sort of thing. And we came back, and the very thought of doing that trip from Britain never really entered anyone's head. And somebody got the bright idea, so we flew up from Lincolnshire to Scotland, and we actually could just about manage to go to Tromsø and back from Scotland. So it was, and that, we started out at night, and of course we flew during the day, and then we came back, and it was the longest trip I can ever remember. And as a navigator, and you're flying over water, and we were at low level, so you very, very few aids. It was hard work.
I'm sure.
When 617 were practicing for the dams raid, a lot of them were frightened that it was for the Tirpitz. And yet when the Tirpitz raid came about, they seemed to have relaxed themselves about it and just went for it. Did you feel like that, or did you?
Well, it's, when you're in the Air Force and you're asked to do a job, you do it, you know, because you have no choice. It's as simple as that. We didn't actually know what the target was, although we had a pretty good idea. We didn't know what the target was. We didn't officially know what the target was until we actually had briefing. And we were briefed. The final briefing was at night, but the pilots and the navigators always had a pre-briefing, and when we learnt what it was, I wasn't particularly surprised. And then the main briefing was late that night, I think, whatever the day it was. And I'm sorry, what was your question?
Did you
were you nervous preparing for the Tirpitz raid, as the originators had been for the dams raid, when they thought it was going to be the Tirpitz?
You're not worried. It sounds a bit dramatic, but I never really expected to survive the war. It's as simple as that, you know. And It was always going to be the other men who got killed and not you, you see. It sort of kept you going. Apprehensive would be, not frightened, apprehensive. You had a job to do, you'd been trained to do it, and it was a question of getting out there and doing it.
When did you know that it had been successful and she had been sunk, as it were?
When we got back, we had a forced landing because we'd been hit with flak, but eventually when we got back to, we did a forced landing at one of the Scottish aerodromes, and we stayed overnight, and we came down the following day, and I knew then how successful it was because the Under Secretary of State for Air, I've forgotten his name now, had come up to the squadron. Archibald Sinclair. And we were given 48 hours leave. Well, that's all that mattered, 48 hours leave. And that's when we knew. Well, we knew, actually. We knew that when we left the Tirpitz, we knew it was a goner because we actually saw it.
Well, I think we ought to finish on that very successful note, and thank you very much, Mr. Burns.
It's been my pleasure, sir. I've been a little apprehensive about what we're going to do.
More worried about this than the Tirpitz, I know.
Oh, there you are.
We could listen to you all day. I think, really, we could. It's just the pressure that you're needed elsewhere and you've got other commitments, but I found that absolutely fascinating and moving.